Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The Senate today looks to pass two bills countering the deleterious effects of social media on young people.
The legislation would require platforms give teens the option to opt out of algorithms and give parents more control over how their kids' information is used. X and Microsoft have endorsed the safeguards, and Meta says it backs legislation to regulate tech platforms, but the company stopped short of endorsing the Senate bill.
ABC's Andrea Fajii. House Speaker Mike Johnson will not commit to giving the bill a vote there. The wildfire burning north of Chico, California, is now the sixth largest in state history and was no accident. Ronnie Dean Stout, charged with felony arson, alleged to have pushed his burning car into a gully last week, starting the blaze. Scheduled to blast off this morning from Florida's Cape Canaveral Space Force Station, an Atlas V rocket carrying a top-secret payload for Space Force's Space Systems Command. This is ABC News. We continue to learn more about fired white Sangamon County, Illinois Sheriff's Deputy Sam Grayson, who shot and killed unarmed black woman Sonia Massey in her own Springfield, Illinois home after calling about a possible intruder. Her killing officially ruled a homicide.
Moments after the shooting, Deputy Grayson explaining the situation to responding officers.
Where's the gun?
No, she had a boiling water and came at me with boiling water.
You shot her?
Yeah. She said she was going to rebuke me in the name of Jesus and came out with boiling water.
Records show Grayson worked at six police departments in 4 years, got two DUIs, and was discharged from the Army for serious misconduct.
Grayson remains jailed on first-degree murder and other charges. The gospel music world in mourning at word that three members of the Nellons, a Hall of Fame quartet, were killed in a plane crash 250 miles north of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Also killed in that crash was the chair of the board overseeing the Georgia Department of Corrections. I'm Richard Cantu, ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.fm.
The president ends his reelection campaign.
And the Civic Media team led by Todd Albaugh and Terry Bell brings you the breaking news.
After days, if not weeks, of advice to pull out of his reelection campaign.
President Biden releasing this letter, quote, I believe it is in the best interest for me to stand down.
Real news and great conversation.
You can count on it on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Mino and the Mayor.
How do you keep your water for your bird feeder? Yeah, those little motors that go in there. Those little fans.
I didn't put those in yet.
Does your bird feeder freeze? Does your bird bath freeze?
Jim, do you remember giving him that as a gift?
You know
you
what?
You gave him that
I
as a gift.
I did. I gave you that. You've never used it. I want it back.
In the winter, the birds use those little skating rink.
Mino and the Mayor. Weekday mornings 6 till 9 on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 WISS and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Reed Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project on Project 2025.
Donald Trump, Mr. Vance, when you say mass deportation, what do those words actually mean? Tell me how you're going to identify those people. Tell me where you're going to put those people. Something like a mass deportation suddenly becomes a massive forced roundup of people who maybe have been here 6 months and maybe have been here 60 years.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Crude and Dom.
Tune in for the Tuesday edition of the Devil's Advocates will rehash President Joe Biden's proposition for the U.S. Supreme Court. Should they recuse? Hell to the yeah.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
We have a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms today, tonight, and again tomorrow. Otherwise, it's going to be partly cloudy, warm, and humid. Our high in the mid to upper 80s today, upper 80s tomorrow, with a heat index 90 to 95 or better each day. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinaire on Air with Jane Matinaire. Weekdays 10 till noon on the talk of Green Bay, 97.9 FM and 1590 AM WGBW, and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Maggie Dawn.
Next up, Maggie's out for the week. Matt Rothschild's filling in. We're going to be talking about the incredible impact of the fire hose of news that has been the last few weeks.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Well, good morning, folks. Whether you're up with the roosters or still easing into the day, I'm so glad that you're making the Midwest Farm Report a part of your morning. Welcome in, everybody. I'm Charity Seebecker, and here at the Midwest Farm Report, we try to connect the dots on what's happening in agriculture. Today, for example, we're hearing more about the topic that seems to be on everyone's mind and the topic at many dinner tables, mine included, the weather. More so, we'll be diving into the why behind what's been causing the weather patterns that we've been experiencing. We'll dig more into that in just a little bit. And speaking of that weather, it may be a little cloudy with some rain showers, but it's going to be staying pretty warm the next few days. We're looking at high 80-degree temps here in Madison and throughout the state. Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist, has weather details on the way. Plus, learn more about what it takes behind the scenes to make this sweet treat that we love to enjoy throughout the summer. I'm talking about Quick Trip ice cream. We'll also dive deeper into our commodity markets as we hear from market advisor John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing. All of those details are yet to come.
What does life on the cutting edge mean to alfalfa grower Dan Sheps?
Harv Extra has been very consistent on our test results from first crop through fourth crop. The higher quality has allowed us to feed more alfalfa haylage in our diet, and cows are able to have a higher intake with a higher quality forage.
What does life on the cutting edge mean to alfalfa grower Riley Lepenka?
Making hay has changed so much now with Harv Extra alfalfa. You don't have to be tied down to a certain cutting window. That saves us a lot of headache, a lot of cost, wear and tear on machinery, you name it. I don't see any farm that it wouldn't work. Any kind of operation, if you have 10 cows, 10,000, it doesn't matter.
What does life on the cutting edge mean for alfalfa growers? Flexibility, yield, or quality? Harv Extra alfalfa with Roundup Ready technology gives you an extra edge every time you harvest. Hear grower stories at harvextra.com.
Hey, Wisconsin, this year's statewide science festival is featuring agriculture, and we need your help. The Science Festival is a free event that reaches all corners of the state and showcases technology, engineering, and more to 40,000 people of all ages. The festival is looking for individuals and organizations to host or volunteer at these events. This year's festival will be held in more than 50 counties from October 14th through the 20th. Visit WisconsinScienceFest.org to sign up to help today.
Wisconsin weather has definitely given us a whole gamut in the last 12 months. From a dry, warm summer to a warm, dry winter to a warm, wet spring, we're moving right through on a pretty wet summer. I'm Jill Welke from the northern end of the world's longest barn here in Eau Claire, and I like to find out the why things happen. So I made contact with Mr. Drew Lerner. He's the president and senior meteorologist from World Weather Incorporated. He has some insight on our weather patterns and why our weather is the way it is, I guess. So let's get started with our warm, dry winter. The reasoning behind that.
Yeah, you know, the winter was largely dominated by an El Nino event, and El Nino events tend to make Canada and the north central U.S. and northwestern states a drier and warmer bias. And this particular year, the El Nino event was a little bit more, we'll call it broadly biased, influencing a larger portion of North America. And the part of the reason for that was something I call the 18-year cycle. It's actually a lunar cycle. And that cycle was already dictating that we were going to see below normal precipitation. Now, you know, anytime you get these patterns that start lining up and agreeing with each other as to what's going to happen, that's when you get those most pronounced anomalies. And that's what we did see over the winter. There was plenty of patterns that were lining up with the same solution that we were going to be dry biased over the winter and warm, and surely that's exactly what did take place. But in a normal El Nino year, we would not have seen the heat and dryness quite as widespread as it was. It would have been more of a Canadian prairies phenomenon and from the Dakotas back into the Pacific Northwest. It was just a little bit more expansive. And so we definitely did experience that, and we got away from it a little bit. As we got into the spring, we started seeing a little bit of change taking place in the atmosphere. Now, before I go into that, I should point out that in our studies here, we were amazed when we looked at that lunar cycle. We went back and looked at that cycle all the way back into the early 1900s, and every time that pattern appeared, we not only had a drier winter, but we also had a drier spring. And that was of great interest to us because we thought, oh, you know, we're going to go into quite a pattern. Well, it turned out, of course, the spring wasn't dry. We were dry until we got halfway through the season, and then suddenly it started raining. So we did want to sit down and try to assess what was going on and why that was taking place. Well, one of the things that we learned was that El Nino was having a big influence on our spring at the same time this 18-year cycle was playing out, and the two were fighting each other. As we got into the second half of spring, there was this tendency for wetter than normal weather to evolve across a big part of the upper Midwest and parts of the Great Lakes region in general, just the northern Midwest, actually a big part of the Midwest in general, actually. And that appears to have come from one of those lunar cycle years. I told you we looked back at six of them that went all the way back into the turn of the 20th century. And five of the six of them all had this dry bias, but the one year that didn't was 1970. And in 1970, we had a very similar situation where the Midwest was wet. And we thought, okay, well, we'll start looking at 1970. So we looked at 1970, and we didn't find a good match for the rest of the country because, as it turns out, El Nino was still controlling other parts of the country. So we ended up with this dry bias in the Pacific Northwest and across the southwestern U.S. plains. And actually, the southwest plains dryness, along with the wet bias in the Midwest, was all part of this 1970 event. Let me just say this, that during the winter, we were dominated by El Nino. In the spring, we started being influenced by both that 1970 anomaly and still El Nino in other parts of the country.
And as we move through the summer, boy, we've gotten wet. We're here in Wisconsin. We are 99% adequate to surplus when it comes to moisture on our topsoil. What is the reasoning behind us being so wet compared to last summer when we couldn't pay for a rain shower?
You know, we can make up a lot of reasons, and sometimes they sound real good. I'm going to tell you the reason, but I got to tell you that it may not be exactly the right answer. We're always doing studies here. We'll take weather patterns, so we'll try to follow them and go back in history. What we found, which was of great interest, was we were interested in years where we moved from an El Nino to a La Nina during the year. Now, if you go back to March or even February, NOAA has a forecast model for El Nino and La Nina, and they were expecting La Nina to kick in maybe as early as June. So we went back, started looking at studies where we went from an El Nino in January to La Nina in June, and normally we would get a lot of dryness going on. Well, that matched a lot of these other 18-year cycle years. And we thought, okay, well, we're going to go back to the dry bias. But as it turned out, La Nina did not evolve in June. In fact, it still has not evolved. So we went back to the drawing board and looked at these years where we had an El Nino in January, but we didn't see La Nina until later in the year, like August or September. Well, it turns out in those years, there was a strong association with wet biased conditions in the upper Midwest, the eastern Dakotas, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, even parts of Michigan and Illinois. And that's where we are today. Those other 3 years, just so you know, what we were looking at were 1983, 1998, and 2016. Those were 3 years that we moved from an El Nino in January to a La Nina in August or September. And in each of those years, there was a wetter bias that occurred, just like we're seeing right now, that was with us through a big part of the summer.
Well, it's always good to get some insight on our weather, from the warmth, the dry, to the wet. We sure do get a lot of gamuts within a year. And that was Drew Lerner, president and senior meteorologist from World Weather Incorporated. And I'm Jill Welke from the northern end of the world's longest barn here in Eau Claire.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
Where the fans own the team. This is the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and I dedicate a lot of my time going fast. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
I was in a drive-through line and forgot to order. I was on the phone, thought I ordered, and just stayed in line and got up to the window. There was no order for me. And I said to the guy, I go, can I just order now? And he was so condescending. And he goes, well, typically what we do, sir, here is we order back at the speaker, and this is where you pick it up. I've never felt so stupid in my entire life.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Mino and the mayor.
That's what we can do, Johnny. We can start a new mafia. You're the Italian. I could act.
You're the accountant.
I could
act. You're the whole thing.
I'd like to do more than accounting, but.
No, I know, but you know what I mean? Well, that's just the.
Okay.
But I say the accountant.
Todd would be.
That sounds like a good name.
Jim, you could run the east side, okay?
I'll take the
whatever.
Mino and the mayor, weekday mornings 6 till 9 on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 WISS and on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we update you on all the latest news. Also, we learn about Rally Round the Markers going on in Waukesha. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matinair on air.
I'm talking about apples. Apple production is looking to be ahead of normal bloom time and production level. This is according to Jacob Franzen. He's the farm manager at Sky High Fruit Farm in Baraboo. He says that despite the excess rain the state has been getting, they've been pretty lucky to avoid severe flooding.
The recent rains haven't been too bad for us. Looking back at last year with the drought, we lost a lot of volume just based on size. You know, the fruit weren't sizing because the moisture wasn't there. So this year, weather has been rainy, but we haven't had any trees flood out. You know, I'm not really worried about wet roots or anything like that. We have a really nice crop in terms of number of fruit per tree, and with the moisture in the ground, it looks like they're going to size appropriately. So we've been lucky enough. You know, I know some of, like, even some of our fields have flooded out.
He added that last year's drought significantly affected their yields, but the rain this year has actually been beneficial. Although they've faced increased fungal pressure, their trees have responded well to the moisture. And speaking of the weather impacts, it's been a pretty wet spring into summer so far, as we know. So let's talk about it. It's time for our ag weather update with our ag meteorologist, Stu Muck. Stu, what can we expect for weather coming up? Any flooding that maybe Jacob or other growers as well should be watching for?
I don't know that flooding is going to be a big concern, at least for a time, but I think, especially Charity, as we look at Wednesday night into Thursday, rain could get heavier in Wisconsin, and there are some areas that, of course, are still very, very saturated, so even talking about another quarter to half or three quarters of an inch of rain could really add to some big problems. So we have a lot to watch for as we head on toward midweek and later on. We certainly have excessive heat, and that humidity rising daily is adding to some stress and pressure, of course, as things get a lot more uncomfortable and, in fact, dangerous for some that just aren't quite set up or able to handle the heat that really turns on this time of the year. Now, rain has been a little different matter. I've got a report from Racine of yesterday at an inch and 27 hundredths, Elkhorn at 3/10 of an inch, barely enough to wet the rain gauge right at Fond du Lac, but toward the Sheboygan County border. My friend Paul at Banner, 44 hundredths of an inch. And then you look to Osseo, northwest Wisconsin, an inch and 32 hundredths. So rainfall amounts have been all over the board. There's a front still steady off to the south or around Nebraska to northern Missouri and Illinois. There's rain down around that boundary. There's rain up in north central Minnesota, Brainerd, Bemidji, and further north. All of that activity is going to try to move east. That front may rise a bit from the south, and we're going to have some chances of rain. You know, we're not going to see that system from Minnesota plow right through the state. It'll probably fall apart or stay there somewhat, but something will pop up and be a chance later today and into Wednesday. Like I've said, more likely, especially Wednesday night into Thursday, when we have some more widespread rains. And I'll have our forecast details right after this.
Join the Midwest Farm Report and Pam Yonke as she kicks off Wisconsin Farm Technology Days at the Oxbo exhibit on August 13th at 9 a.m. in booth 347. Oxbo is a leader in harvesting and application technology. Visit oxbo.com.
The fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke will also be broadcasting at 11:30 a.m. in booth 520 on 5th Street with Rural Mutual Insurance. Learn how the number one farm insurer is keeping Wisconsin strong with premiums paid here that stay here. Visit ruralmutual.com.
Around the clock, your dairy cows rely on you. And when you need support, Compeer Financial is here. Here with cutting-edge ag finance technology, industry knowledge, and local experience to help your farm thrive. As avid supporters of the dairy industry, we tip our hats to you during June Dairy Month and every other month of the year. Contact us at 844-426-6733 or visit Compeer.com today. Compeer Financial is an equal credit opportunity lender and provider. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved.
Hey, Wisconsin, this year's statewide science festival is featuring agriculture, and we need your help. The Science Festival is a free event that reaches all corners of the state and showcases technology, engineering, and more to 40,000 people of all ages. The festival is looking for individuals and organizations to host or volunteer at these events. This year's festival will be held in more than 50 counties from October 14th through the 20th. Visit WisconsinScienceFest.org to sign up to help today.
Alrighty, Sue, let's hear our weather forecast.
All right, Charity, we talked today about some mostly sunny skies, some morning fog not out of the question, and then a scattered shower, a pop-up thunderstorm mid or late afternoon. Today's temperature's in the upper 80s as winds become southwest at 5. More clouds, some fog around late tonight. Could be a shower, an isolated storm late in the nighttime. Temps drop in the very upper 60s to low 70s with the south breezes at 5. Partly sunny Wednesday, just a slight chance for a scattered shower or thunderstorm popping up in the day. I'd expect temps again in the upper 80s with the south winds at 5. But late Wednesday night into Thursday, more likelihood of some rain. Partly sunny Thursday with those rain chances in the mid-80s then. South winds becoming west at 5. And I'd say, Charity, rain amounts probably at least up to a half to three quarters of an inch. And there'll be some pretty wet areas when we talk by Friday.
Well, I'm not, you know, I don't really care about the rain right now. I don't think we want more, but I guess if we're going to have to have it, at least we're going to get that 80-degree weather as well. Everybody, that is Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist, with our ag weather update on a Tuesday. And if you are getting that rain he talked about, let us know. Just let us know how much you've been getting. Message our talk text line. You can text us at 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Stick around with us as you'll never know what you'll learn next.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Jahnke.
From I-43 to I-41.
This is the Talk of Green Bay.
1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. When citizens move or die, voter registration lists need to be updated as part of routine list hygiene. But when lists are aggressively purged, particularly close to an election, it crosses the line into voter suppression. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp signed Senate Bill 189 in May, allowing voters to be removed from the rolls as little as 45 days before an election. In addition to Georgia's purge of over 190,000 voters in 2023, activists are expected to challenge thousands more at the polls under new SB 189 rules. Wyoming employed its new Use It or Lose It law in May to remove 28% of its registered voters, according to reporting by Wildfile. The law requires any voter not voting in the prior midterm or general election to be removed from its voter rolls. The Ohio Capital Journal reported July 25th that Ohio's Secretary of State posted a list of over 158,000 voters scheduled to be purged prior to the presidential election. The executive director of the Ohio Unity Coalition, speaking to Dayton Now, said, "What we know is that 50% of these voters are registered in Ohio counties where a majority black and brown population live. Voters should check the status of their registration online or with their local election officials. Find links at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
There's danger out there. It lurks on highways and quiet neighborhood streets. It's more likely to kill you than a shark and more terrifying than the biggest snake. Distracted driving claims lives every day. Every notification, swipe, social post, video, or selfie while driving risks your life. So while you might think public speaking or the zombie apocalypse is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Reed Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project.
Project 2025 says that for the first time in 30 years, we want to restart testing of nuclear weapons. Tell me who that's good for. Yeah. I'm not sure it's really good for anybody. I have no proof of this. I think Donald Trump wants to see a mushroom cloud. I think he wants to feel the warm glow of an H-bomb on his pasty orange skin. I think he wants to feel the power.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The Senate today looks to pass two bills countering the deleterious effects of social media on young people.
The legislation would require platforms give teens the option to opt out of algorithms and give parents more control over how their kids' information is used. X and Microsoft have endorsed the safeguards, and Meta says it backs legislation to regulate tech platforms, but the company stopped short of endorsing the Senate bill.
ABC's Andrea Fajii. House Speaker Mike Johnson will not commit to giving the bill a vote there. The wildfire burning north of Chico, California, is now the sixth largest in state history and was no accident. Ronnie Dean Stout, charged with felony arson, alleged to have pushed his burning car into a gully last week, starting the blaze. Scheduled to blast off this morning from Florida's Cape Canaveral Space Force Station, an Atlas V rocket carrying a top-secret payload for Space Force's Space Systems Command. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Democrats are urging primary voters to vote no on two proposed constitutional amendments on August 13th. State Democratic Party Chair Ben Wickler says the questions are intentionally confusing and would slow down money from Washington to Wisconsin communities in an emergency. A strict abortion law is now in effect in neighboring Iowa, where most abortions are now banned after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers.
I feel sorry for the women in Iowa. This is a national issue. It's not just a Wisconsin issue or an Iowa issue. Women should have the right to determine their reproductive health.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court will hear two abortion cases in the months to come. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Jordan Love on his record-breaking contract. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL in Green Bay, the Packers held practice in pads as training camp enters its second week. Jordan Love completing a 47-yard pass to Christian Watson on his first day back after signing a contract making him the highest-paid quarterback in NFL history. Love told me the talks began back in May. I asked him what was it like when he didn't have a deal at the start of camp.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely been the waiting game these past couple of days. I'm just trying to be patient. But knowing that it was going to get done here soon. But yeah, I mean, right after we got done, you know, my agents FaceTimed me and gave me the news and broke to me. So it was a very special day hearing that and just going through the whole motions of, you know, obviously getting a contract, being able to be here, and then just obviously being able to get back on the field with the guys. So it was definitely a very special day.
Baseball tonight, the Brewers host the Atlanta Braves. Colin Ray on the mound for Milwaukee. Devin Williams back as the closer. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome host of the music podcast Rock Solid, Pat Francis, and Madison stand-up comic Mike Mercury joins the show to discuss Madison Comedy Week.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
We have a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms today, tonight, and again tomorrow. Otherwise, it's going to be partly cloudy, warm, and humid. Our high in the mid to upper 80s today, upper 80s tomorrow, with a heat index 90 to 95 or better each day. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is a 1,200-mile footpath started in the 1950s and now running through 30 Wisconsin counties. The Ice Age Trails PR director, Melissa Pyrick, says one group of hikers describes it best.
They started in St. Croix Falls, so they kind of did this North Woods, which is very rural and rustic. And they said they couldn't believe once you get down into the southern part of the state, especially Dane County, all of a sudden it turns into prairies and it's just beautiful.
The trail continues south to Janesville, then back to the northeast and up to Sturgeon Bay. It is also one of just 11 in the country designated as a National Scenic Trail. Learn more about it in your area at iceagetrail.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Babes, what are you doing?
What? I'm just mowing the lawn.
No, it's blazing hot and dry out here. Don't you remember? Smokey Bear says.
Avoid using power equipment when it's windy or dry.
Where'd you learn this?
Oh, it's on
SmokeyBear.com with many other wildfire prevention tips.
Right. Thanks, Honey Bear.
Because remember, only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trigvi Olsen, Senior Advisor with the Lincoln Project.
You know, one of the things I think that you've done with this show, and I'm proud to be a part of it, is we've really tried to get out and listen to people.
And that's why I'm so thankful to work for a company like Civic Media that allows us to do that. Because the more we get out and listen to our friends and neighbors, we discover they're not our enemy. We're all Americans, and yeah. It really is a melting pot.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Busted Pencils. Fully leaded education talk.
Randy Weingarten, the dynamic and influential president of the American Federation of Teachers.
The Heritage Foundation want their way of life rather than the diverse, pluralistic democracy that has been America for 247 years. It's this fight between anger and aspiration.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media Media app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts. You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Back to the Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
What's happening worldwide that's affecting our markets here back home? Stick around to find out, as we'll be hearing all about it from John Heinberg, Market Advisor with Total Farm Marketing, in just a little bit. But for now, we shift our focus to something that's a bit sweeter and closer to home. Ice cream. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Charity Seebecker, and this is the Midwest Farm Report. And when it comes to ice cream, everyone has a favorite flavor that brings back some fond memories. And for me, it's enjoying a hot fudge sundae or Quick Trip's chocolate chip cookie dough. But what many don't realize is the incredible amount of work and innovation that goes into creating these delicious treats. Andrew Riley, Quick Trip Dairy Production Manager, and Katarina Nimitz, a food scientist in their R&D department, provide an inside look for us at the meticulous process behind Quick Trip's ice cream creations.
So there's actually a lot of research that's involved when we come up with new flavors. We look at market trends, data, kind of what is selling in our region. And we kind of pull from those ideas. There is, you know, customer feedback as well, kind of just fun things that we see out there. Sometimes it's as simple as we find a really cool product, like an inclusion, and then we kind of just base the entire ice cream around that one piece, thinking that it'll just make it fun and unique.
How long does it take to actually make this then? Or who does? Kind of what is that process?
So from inception, that the idea, it can be anywhere from about a year to 2 years. By the time we procure all the ingredients, figure out the formula, the recipe, test it out, get taste testers, show it to a larger group within our company, then we do a shelf life, and it's really extensive to make sure the quality is still there at the end of shelf life. So, yeah, it could take almost 2 years before we figure out something and it goes on store shelves.
And I'm sure you've got some taste testers, right? That's their job, is to try these new developing flavors and decide, okay, maybe this is one we stick with, or maybe it's one we don't. So do you have any maybe interesting stories or things like that about trying maybe some of these wild flavors?
There's a lot of people that taste test the ice cream throughout the process. We have large groups within the company, you know, people that are making decisions and production people, they're trying them too, along with our group in the R&D department. But I think one of the most unique flavors I've ever tried was at a trade show in Vegas. They had sweet corn ice cream, and it was so identical to sweet corn, it was almost confusing. You had like the kernels in your mouth even. It tasted exactly like eating corn off the cob.
And what are some of the customer favorite ice cream flavors at Quick Trip?
So that one would definitely be our brookie dough. We get a lot of emails just saying how good that is. They wish that was in different size containers and everything like that, and they just can't get enough of it. So definitely a brookie dough.
What is that flavor exactly? I've never had it personally, so tell me, what is it?
It's half vanilla ice cream, half chocolate ice cream with a fudge ribbon with cookie dough and brownie pieces in it. And it's loaded with pieces.
How does Quick Trip ensure the quality and freshness of its ice cream then? What is that shelf life?
We go through extensive shelf life testing on our product. We test it every week for about a year, and then we even go past what our shelf life is. We have a really good relationship with our vendors. We make sure that we're getting really high quality ingredients to go into our ice cream. We're blast freezing it, making sure it stays really frozen, doesn't get icy, good quality milk,
Yep, I'd say the same thing that Kat did too. It's here at Quick Trip, we have very high standards for any product, not only ice cream, but like she said, our milk. It has our Nature's Touch milk made with the ice cream. So again, it's just the super high standard that we have with any of our products here.
So you're making the ice cream, but obviously you're getting these ingredients from somewhere. So take me through now the sourcing of these ingredients. Let's maybe start with the milk used in your ice cream. You do have your Nature's Touch milk you mentioned. Take me through a little bit more about your dairy and just how much milk you do use.
Milk with here, we source it within 150 miles of our dairy here, so everything is local within the tri-state area here. We're bringing in roughly about 13 to 17 truckloads a day. So we go through quite a bit of milk.
So how much ice cream do you sell then a year?
So if we're talking about just how much ice cream we go through like in a year and a month, we are roughly selling 6 million units a year for ice cream. And that's kind of equivalent to about 467,000 units a month. And right now we have 24 different SKUs of ice cream. That's that number is not including our LTOs either.
You mentioned the sweet corn flavor that you got to try, but what are some of maybe the more unique flavors that you guys have created?
So some of the ones that we've created, we do have coming out next month, which we're pretty excited about. We do have a caramel apple ice cream coming out. It is very delicious, so we're super excited about that. We just, earlier this year, we had the waffle cone ice cream. It's one of my favorites there, too. So I'm hoping that one gets back out on the shelves next year. But right now, we do have our, like Kat said, we do have our triple chocolate fudge brownie out and our scrounds. So
how often do you guys introduce new flavors or rotate the selection then?
So with our scrounds container, it's roughly about every 3 months. And then with pints, we rotate out about every 6 months.
You've used the word scrounged a few times now. So for those of us that don't know that Quick Trip lingo, can you tell me what is that? What is a scrounged? What does that even mean?
Yeah, so that one we actually get a lot of questions on. So it's called a scrounged. It's because the container is not round or it's square, so we call it a scrounged.
That's Quick Trip Dairy Production Manager Andrew Riley and food scientist in the R&D department, Katarina Nimitz, along with us. Keep an eye out for new and exciting releases, and be sure to get some ice cream to celebrate the last few days of July National Ice Cream Month. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Hey, Wisconsin. This year's statewide science festival is featuring agriculture, and we need your help. The Science Festival is a free event that reaches all corners of the state and showcases technology, engineering, and more to 40,000 people of all ages. The festival is looking for individuals and organizations to host or volunteer at these events. This year's festival will be held in more than 50 counties from October 14th through the 20th. Visit WisconsinScienceFest.org to sign up to help today. Join the Midwest Farm Report and Pam Yonke as she kicks off Wisconsin Farm Technology Days at the Oxbow exhibit on August 13th at 9 a.m. in booth 347. Oxbow is a leader in harvesting and application technology. Visit oxbow.com.
The fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke will also be broadcasting at 11:30 a.m. in booth 520 on Fifth Street with Rural Mutual Insurance. Learn how the number one farm insurer is keeping Wisconsin strong with premiums paid here that stay here. Visit RuralMutual.com.
Welcome back. I'm Charity Seebecker. Happy to be with you this Tuesday morning. Thanks for joining me on the Midwest Farm Report. Our crops have had plenty of moisture, as we know, but farmers were in the field harvesting hay and small grains, according to the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Corn silking was 58% complete, 2 days ahead of last year and 1 day ahead of the 5-year average. Corn in the dough stage reached 15% and condition rated 62% good to excellent, which is up 1 percentage point from last week. Soybeans blooming was 65%. That's 2 days behind last year and 3 days behind the average. And 30% of soybeans were setting pods. Soybean condition remained 60% good to excellent from last week. 86% of the oats have colored and 27% of the crop has been harvested. 68% of the winter wheat harvest is done, which that is about a week ahead of average. And the second cutting of alfalfa is 88% finished, while third cutting for some is about that 29% finished range. Well, moving from the field now to the trades, let's take a look at our markets. From Chicago, your Tuesday morning markets, cash corn is trading at 394.5. That's down 1.75. And new crop corn is trading at 410.25, and that is down 2 cents. Cash beans are trading at 1051.25. That is down 3.5 cents. And new crop beans are trading at 1032.25, and that is down 7.25 cents. And wheat is trading at 524.25, and that is down 6.75. On the dairy side of things now, August Class 3 milk contract is trading at 2050 a hundredweight. That is down a penny. And September Class 3 milk contract is trading at 2148 a hundredweight, and that is down 5 cents. Looking ahead even a little bit more there, October Class 3 milk contract is trading at 2129 a hundredweight. That's up 2 cents. And November Class 3 milk contract is trading at 2069 a hundredweight, and that is up 3 cents. Barrel cheese closed yesterday at 197.5. That was up a half. 40-pound block cheese closed at 195. That was up 2 cents. And the double A butter closed down a quarter yesterday and closed at 308.75. Those are your morning markets on this Tuesday, July 30th. Be sure to stick around with us here on the Midwest Farm Report as we have more news on the way. And as always, if there's something that you want to know more about, let us know by messaging our talk text line at 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Now stick around with me this morning as you'll never know what you'll learn next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Okay, I have been to Disney, and the first time I didn't even come close to sticking to my budget. How much Dole Whip can one mom eat? Turns out, quite a lot. Now since then, as a Disney lover, I have found a few hacks, and today I'm going to share a little savings secret I recently stumbled across. It's a website called David's Vacation Club Rentals. So for more than 20 years, David's has helped Disney Vacation Club point owners rent their points to prospective Disney vacationers. Then vacationers like me or you can use those points to book rooms on Disney properties. It's a little more complicated than a regular reservation, but the discounts can be pretty steep, like half the cost. Check it out, David's Vacation Club Rentals. For more Disney discounts, check out the member benefit section at workmoney.org. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Milwaukee County Board Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson.
The moment I walked out of the auditorium, I said, it's our time now. It's the little girls that look like me who wake up with brown skin and sometimes wonder, do they matter? To have someone like Kamala, who is not only qualified, but representative of voices that have been ignored for far too long, it felt like all things are possible.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time. It's Tuesday Tangents with Luke Mathers. Find out what's grinding his gears in your phone calls. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You can reach him at TotalFarmMarketing.com or 877-334-9779. So, John, with the change in the weather forecast that we've been seeing, grains have been in a tough spot. What are you seeing?
Yeah, let's kind of keep our focus on the grain markets here this morning, because it's kind of a crossroads point here for these markets, and also a time of year where things can get extremely difficult. We saw some really strong selling come into the grain markets yesterday. Last week, there was a lot of talk that we're going to have a very above, you know, above normal temperatures coming through, drier conditions coming through, and things kind of walked away from that as the weekend went on. We moved the warmer temperatures a little more to the west, even though things are still going to be warm, but nothing excessive, at least in the core of the Corn Belt. Add in the fact that now we've got a little bit more moisture, again, rain on the radar again this morning across the Corn Belt, and the market quickly took any weather premium that it had been building out of the marketplace yesterday. Did get a little bit of recovery towards the end of the day. Actually saw the corn market turn itself back positive. Wheat turned back positive, but then those crop ratings came out again last night after the market closed, and the sellers are back in, at least again this morning, as we're pushing back to retest those lows, or in case of the wheat market, breaking to new lows based off of those ratings.
Well, and to add to that toughness as well, the weather premium has been removed, right?
Yeah, that weather premium's gone. And really what's happening right now is the market's trying to guesstimate and figure out where the size of this crop is. And, you know, there's a lot of problem areas out there, but there's always problem areas out there. But there's also a lot of very, very good things out there across the Corn Belt, for both, especially on the corn side. Soybeans need a little bit more time. We'll figure that one out as we get down the road. But right now, at least a lot of the models that traders are using or analysts are using, taking these crop ratings in. Now we'll see how this all shakes out down the road, but they're putting numbers in that are starting to become above trend line yields. You know, the 181 number in corn might be closer to 183 or 184 is what the market's anticipating. On the soybean side, we're looking at maybe a 53.5 bushel per acre run on some of these models. So that just adds a lot of supply to the situation. And again, that's something we're really struggling with, because right now the demand side is not there at this time frame in this marketplace to get that supply used up.
Well, and the USDA egg prices report that comes out tomorrow, but as we've seen, the prices are setting some new lows yesterday and again this morning. What are you seeing?
Yeah, again, the sellers have taken back over, at least on the overnight session. Now, overnight trade is also very light in terms of volume, and things can move very, very quickly. You know, we'll see what happens when the market starts opening up today. But that was a pretty disappointing day, and especially starting on Friday last week with this market really just breaking through some key levels of support that it needed to hold, especially the soybean and the wheat market. Now, corn right now, we're still range bound. We're basically working a 405 on the bottom, about 415 on the top. With the exception of those couple days last week where he pushed above that, we've really been in here since the July report got done and working this same range. Now, a little fearful here as we're getting into August, and my apologies, we're going to start seeing some of this old crop corn that has to move. We have basis contracts that need to be priced, and there's a lot of supply out there. And one of the biggest tells for the producer in the marketplace is going to be watch what happens with your cash market. If that basis starts falling apart, that's telling us end users are getting comfortable in terms of the supply they got in front of us, and producers may be needing to move some supplies here to get ready for the fall harvest. And that could put us into a tough spot and probably another leg lower if that corn market breaks through that 405 barrier on the bottom end.
Well, that's kind of the Debbie Downer for the morning for everybody. But on a positive side, crop conditions are still looking good. So what are you seeing in terms of yield trends?
You know, again, those yield trends are, as I said a little bit earlier, are still working higher, and that's one of the things still weighing on the marketplace here going forward. Biggest thing, though, we got a lot of crop out there. Some of it's later, and we're going to need a long fall in terms of getting this crop to the maturity finish line. So those are all things going. I know things don't look like, you know, are a little bit bleak right now. A lot of it's still going to come down to how things finish out and where this crop is. We'll start getting those yield numbers. Unfortunately, it won't be until probably late August or September, at least at this time frame, though, the markets are going to be pricing in a pretty big size crop for both corn and soybeans.
And you keep mentioning that the supply and demand dynamic. Words are hard this morning, everybody. But you kept mentioning that dynamic between the two and how they're shaping up. But dive a little deeper into just the demand side of that problem.
Yeah, I've been focusing a lot of my talk this morning on the supply side, and really I need to shift that gear, and I think producers need to start thinking about that as well, is the demand. Export sales for soybeans currently for new crop on the books are about a 24-year low. We're just not seeing the activity that we want to see in the marketplace. Corn is also one of the lowest numbers in the last decade here in terms of actual bushels locked in for sale into the new crop year. So those are the big concerns right now. Realistically, the supply side, even though I've mentioned a lot of it, you know, it's kind of already here. We need to get the demand moving when we need, and that's the only thing that's going to really turn this market around, is seeing some people step in terms of being importers, buying those U.S. products. But unfortunately, until we find that level of price, things could stay under pressure until we hit that point where the demand increases.
Once again, everybody, that's John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joining us here on your Tuesday morning. You can reach him at totalfarmmarketing.com or 800-334-9779. Thanks for sticking around with me on this Tuesday morning here on the Midwest Farm Report. I'm Charity Seebecker. Have a great day, everybody.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Jahnke.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Or on-farm strategies for risk management. Today on Farm to Fork. If you're ready to try a highly effective microbial soil inoculant, then Rizol from ProGrow Bio should be your first choice. Rizol offers multiple benefits like enhanced biomass, bigger yields, and improved soil health. 100% organic and works with conventional or organic crops, and comes in a soluble dry form for easy handling and long shelf life. Search the web for R-H-I-Z-O-L from ProGrow Bio.
Hey there, it's Mike Rowe, and if you're out there getting dirty, do me a favor and remember to call or click 811 before you dig. And when I say dig, I refer to any activity requiring boring, tilling, drilling, probing, reaming, plowing, drudging, or even scoping. Anything that causes you to roll up your sleeves a little and dig in requires you to first connect with 811 so that you can avoid all those buried pipes, wires, and cables underground. To sum up, call or click 811 before you dig and visit safeexcavator.com for more information.
Yesterday, we talked about the reasons why farmers need to consider strategic risk management. Today, we begin discussing how. And again, we have ag economists from Purdue University weighing in. Here's Michael Langemeyer.
Diversification is a very good response to risk. Given that, why is not everybody really diversified? Why do we move away from farms that had corn, soybeans, wheat, and cattle, and hogs, and on and on and on? We know that if we had six enterprises, we would reduce risk. If you specialize, you're able to garner the economies of scale. And so you have to look at that trade-off between diversification and specialization. Diversification is a good strategy against risk, but other strategies can protect you from downside risk, specifically a strong balance sheet and a low per unit cost.
Langemeyer adds, don't be afraid to seek advice.
If it looks like there's a gap in knowledge there, ask the question, do I need to hire a consultant? Do I need more help in this area? Marketing advice is one that's very typical, but also having an agronomist help with the production plans.
Economist Jim Mintert adds advice for your in-house management team as well.
We're engaged in an industry that's changing very, very rapidly. And if you're not engaged in professional development over time, you're going to fall behind relatively quickly, even if you're state-of-the-art today.
More tomorrow. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Crude and Dom.
Tune in for the Tuesday edition of The Devil's Advocates. We'll rehash President Joe Biden's proposition for the U.S. Supreme Court. Should they recuse? Hell to the yeah.
The Devil's Advocates. Weekdays 4 till 6.
This history can't be denied. Wisconsin is the home of the hamburger. About 30 minutes west of Green Bay, you'll find the city of Seymour, where in the 1880s, young Charlie Nagreen pushed his food cart to the fair. The 15-year-old planned to sell round balls of beef to visitors, but it didn't quite catch on. Can you guess the surprising reason why? The answer's coming up. Every summer, the home of the hamburger celebrates its history in a huge way with Burger Fest in Seymour. There's a 200-pound burger on the grill, a bun, run, ketchup slide, and of course, a burger eating contest. So did you guess why Charlie's first beef recipe didn't work out? Well, as the story goes, visitors to the fair wanted to walk around. Charlie realized he needed to smash his beef ball between two pieces of bread to be able to eat it on the go. Charlie's hamburger, a huge success, making Seymour the home of the hamburger, a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Artist Taylor Swift says she